Hello, everybody. This is Brandon Detzner, and this is Bad Grammar, and this time it is just me. And as I'm talking, I am in my lovely Forest Park basement apartment, talking to my computer. It's 9:38 on a Saturday morning, which I think is kind of revealing, because the way it goes is, you know, I quit my job, I at least significantly delay, if not just completely derail, the career I was working on. I tell myself, okay, I'm just going to be writing right now, and, you know, I'm a wild man, I can go do whatever I want, and I'm going to live this lovely bohemian lifestyle. And in practice, I still wake up at like 7:30 on a Saturday, you know, just because there's that voice in there telling me that, Brendan, you have many important things to accomplish. Because I'm from the Midwest, and I eat oatmeal, and I own a socket wrench, and, you know, I get up early on Saturday to go do things, which is just kind of how it is, no matter how wild and crazy I might like to pretend that I'm going to be. But that's okay. That's good. That might lead to me having some kind of success with this whole thing, I hope. Well, anybody that is, in fact, actually reading this is probably going to be roughly familiar with this already, from blogging or online things, or just from, God forbid, from actually talking to me in person about this stuff. But I'm at about the 8 month, not the 8 month mark even, really. It's like the, I think it's like the 9 month mark, at least, of quitting my job as a teacher and turning to writing full time. And writing full time for me in practice has meant me chasing around a bunch of part time jobs, but also it has also meant me writing an awful lot and doing lots of kind of career stuff that I haven't really had time to do before, and putting a lot of thought into this that has been, have just a lot of mental energy that's been tied up with other things before. And it's been going pretty good. I've been kind of a busy bee. I've got a bunch of things that are coming up here, and I even made myself a little list so that I can tell all of you about them. Here we go. Okay. So, upcoming things. I have a story in the upcoming anthology called Exigencies from Dark House Press, which is a very cool little local Chicago imprint. They're a outgrowth of the little Chicago imprint Curbside Splendor, which is kind of is there up in Logan Square. They've had some success. And Dark House Press is mostly devoted to noir and horror and some of the weirder stuff that is kind of more up my alley. And Exigencies is their big, exciting anthology of kind of new undiscovered authors, and I got a story in there called Figure 8 that I'm really fond of, and that book is going to be coming out shortly. By way of promoting that book, I'm going to be doing a whole slew of local reading series and lots of the things where you tend to see me anyway. I'm just going to be featured this time and talking and reading stories for a little bit longer. As you hear this right now, a couple of the important upcoming ones is that I'm going to be at Gumbo Fiction Salon on the 15th, and if you've gone to Gumbo Fiction Salon a lot, you've probably heard me before, but I'm going to have a little bit more time. I'm going to be reading the story, again, Figure 8 from the Exigencies anthology. And I'm also going to be there with Richard Thomas, who is the editor-in-chief of Dark House Press and also the person editing the Exigencies anthology. And he's going to be reading stories, too. So that'll be a lot of fun. And that's on Wednesday night on the 13th, Gumbo Fiction Salon. And you can Facebook that and look it up. It's up in Lincoln Park. It's not that bad to get to if you're in the city. You can do public transportation. And the other thing that's going to be coming up is that I got Bad Grammar coming up on the 17th, and Bad Grammar, as I'm sure you guys know, is something that most of the people that read on this podcast tend to read at least occasionally, and some of them almost just pretty much all the time. It's every third Friday. We meet in the back of Powell's Book starting at 6 o'clock, going until 9 o'clock. You can show up whenever you want. You can leave whenever you want. There are all kinds of stories, and I've had a couple times had trouble elevator pitching what exactly Bad Grammar is to people, just because it's, yeah, it's lots of genre stuff, and it's lots of sick humor, and it's lots of weird things, but mostly it just tries not to be boring. And the slate, I've kind of, you know, feel like a lucky duck most of the time for the crew of people that I've been able to attract to my weird little reading series in the back of a bookstore on Friday night, just because the variety is really good, the quality is really good, and and this is going to be real cool things. And this Friday, it'll be especially fun because I'm going to have a new book to sell, so I'm really looking forward to that. So, Gumbo Fiction on the 15th, Bad Grammar on the 17th, and then after that, there's going to be a couple of other cool things going on. I'm going to be doing Tamale Hut Cafe Presents, I'm going to be doing the Brass Monkey Brunch, I'm going to be doing Punch and Parlor, I'm going to be doing lots of things, and I will keep you updated on all of that. And aside from that, so that's the big upcoming thing that is going on. I know that the Cult Fiction anthology that Jude Meyer is crunching away, and I'm not even sure how much I should even talk about that, because I know that's him, but that's going to be coming out too, and that's going to have one of my stories in it. And then more generally, at this point, I have enough short stories stockpiled to be putting out a new collection, and I'm going to be doing that sometimes in the first. I'm not exactly quite sure. I think either like on the tail end of the summer, or maybe even a little bit later than that. If I just kind of want to give all these reading series that I'm appearing at a chance to chill, in case they don't want to have me showing up there every 3 months. But it's going to be really exciting. It's maybe I can run this by. I don't know what the title of the new short story collection is going to be. Beasts is one that I kind of liked, except that it's a one-word title, and all the one-word titles are always taken. Even if it's like, you know, Beasts, 18 More Weird Stories by Brendan Detzner, it's still not quite strong enough. And also, there's no short story in there actually called Beasts, which is a little bit tricky. And the first story, the other possibility is the first story in the collection is just called In the Fall, which I think is a lovely title, but not very evocative. And I don't know, just something I'd like, something I could do to get across the fact that, you know, there's really just a lot of variety, and that I think it's a very kind of punchy collection with lots of weird little left hooks in it and things that you wouldn't expect. And yeah, so I'll be thinking about that, and I'll probably be bugging people about it on the internet if anybody has any ideas for what to call it, and coming up with the cover and all that stuff that I got to do. But I'm going to be really excited about it. I'll be doing a Kickstarter to get a little bit of money together. Yeah, I'll be talking about it a fair lot when that happens. Aside from that, the thing that I've been spending the most time on, aside from just kind of the short stories were mostly already written. I banged out a few extra ones because I kept publishing them, which is nice. But, you know, every time you publish them, then that's, you got to wait 6 months or so before you can do anything else with them. But, you know, still a good thing. But, yeah, anyways, the point is the short stories are mostly done. The big thing I've been working on is I've wanted to have some novels in the tank. And I already had a couple of projects sort of in the tank, and I wanted to have a few more. And what I mean by that is, the tricky thing about writing novels is that for what I'm doing, that is mostly where the money has the potential to come from. I mean, even in terms of selling the rights to other things, people don't buy the rights to short stories hardly ever, really. Really, you got to have novels. But the tricky part is that in order to sell the novels, you have to have a certain amount of buzz and have a certain amount of noise. And the process of actually writing the novels doesn't create any buzz and doesn't create any noise, because mostly you just sort of disappear into your hole, and, you know, you become gradually more pale as sunlight becomes more of a weird foreign concept to you, and people just kind of forget that you exist. So I'm thinking that, and which was, again, fine when I was teaching and I was sort of making my money that way, and I was taking kind of a long game with this, but now I'd kind of like to speed things up. So the way things are going is that I'm almost done. Well, I got three big projects in the can pretty much ready to go. And there's one thing that in the next couple days I'm going to be revising it just a little bit more and shaping it up. But pretty shortly I'm going to have these three big things. And these three things I'm going to be sending out to agents, I'm going to be sending out to publishers, I'm going to be doing everything I can to bring attention to them. But while I'm doing that, I'm not really going to be writing any more novels. I'm also going to be doing short stories, I'm going to be doing things for other media, I'll probably be blogging a little bit, God help me. Just doing everything I can just to kind of beat some pots and pans together and say, hey, I'm over here. I got stuff. Somebody pay attention to me, please. And this is part of that. So these are the big three things that are coming up. I know that in my lovely readership, I know people that are connected to the publishing industry. I know writers. I know all kinds of folks. So if any of these three things sound good, that like, hey, maybe that's, you know, something I'm interested in, or if you know somebody that might be interested in something like this, that's the idea. I'm going to be talking about it. All right. Of those three. First one, I don't even know what order to do them in. I'm going to call this one the first one. It's a book called Millersville. It's about 53,000 words long, which is a little bit on the short side for a novel. And it is, this is good practice for me, by the way, because I suck at elevator pitches. I'm not good at it. I'm still working at this. So this is my practice elevator pitch. Is that it's social science fiction, but I think it's kind of in that spot where, like, if you don't jump up and down and say that it's science fiction, somebody that, you know, thinks of himself as, you know, a more literary reader or something that just reads modern fiction or whatever you're going to call it might not even really notice, because it's social science fiction is what it is. It's about thing. It doesn't involve anything happening that is beyond the bounds of what we're already familiar with. You know, quantum physics doesn't really enter into it. And the vast majority of it is actually just sort of realistic people set in a realistic setting. And that setting is a maximum security prison for teenage girls, not unlike the Illinois Youth Center in Warrenville, which was a place where I worked for a while. And the premise of the book is it's maximum security prison for teenage girls. We meet a lot of the staff. We meet a bunch of the kids that are stuck living there. We find out a little bit about them, and then slowly, as time goes on, through a process that is not entirely revealed to us, things in outside the prison kind of slowly start to go wrong. And the sneaky thing about maximum security prison is that you're not really allowed to have any newspapers in there. You know, the TV news is on some of the time, but you don't really hear about it that much. So it's totally possible to be not really aware of big dramatic things that are going on outside the prison, or for there just to kind of be a delayed reaction before you hear about that stuff, if you hear about it at all, even. So if we had, let's say hypothetically, a situation where the United States or the world economy was precipitously just kind of crashing and going to hell, I'm not going to say Mad Max style, because that's a little bit, again, that sort of brings it more kind of in the slam-bang action science fiction thing, and that's really not what it is. It's more a situation where suddenly you can't buy bananas anymore, you know, and suddenly if you're working for the government, your paychecks start to bounce and you got to wonder, okay, why is it that I'm still working in here when my paychecks are bouncing? Alternately, if I quit, what happens to these people that are sort of responsible for me? If we do not have the resources to actually, you know, take care of these people that were supposedly responsible before, do we just kick them out the door? If we kick them out the door, what's going to happen? It happened to them. What are the implications of that? Things like this. And that's what the book sort of starts out pretty observational, just sort of a day in the life. And then as time goes on, things get a little bit more complicated just as people start running out of food, people start running out of resources, and things get a little dangerous. And I'm going to pour myself a glass of water, because when it's just me talking, goodness gracious. Yeah. 1 second. All right. Big gulp. There we go. All right. Anyway, so that's Millersville. It's a short novel. It's about 53,000 words. That's one of the things that I'm talking about. The other one that I just finished is a thing called Charlie Harmer Takes a Ride. And a lot of you guys will probably be familiar with the Charlie Harmer character. He's appeared in the Book of Dead Things anthology from Twilight Tales, which was a few years back now. Because, geez, I'm getting older now, aren't I? And in that story, there's a story called Charlie Harmer's Last Request. And also, he's appeared in a couple of episodes of Pseudopod, with Charlie Harmer's Day Off, and then Charlie Harmer Looks Back. And Charlie Harmer is a ghost. He was a guy that was a disc jockey in Milwaukee for a long time, and then he died, and over the course of his life did some kind of bad things and a couple of really bad things, and now he has been cursed to walk the earth, which is a lot less dramatic than it might sound like, because in this universe, a ghost is basically a dead person with a job. If you're a ghost, it means that you're sort of stuck in the bad afterlife, but somebody thought that, you know what, maybe you could do something useful, maybe you can keep an eye on this one place, maybe you can kind of handle this one responsibility or do this one thing, and then we'll let you out of the bad afterlife for a while and let you do some stuff. Big gulp, cough. There it is. All right. So, tricky thing is that Charlie's boss in his afterlife has mostly been somebody who's been fairly reasonable, and then very suddenly she is replaced by somebody by a guy called Gary, who is really bad news, and immediately starts using his authority to hurt people and do lots of creepy, kind of scary, kind of unsettling things. So Charlie would like to get rid of Gary. All of Charlie's colleagues would like to get rid of Gary. The problem is they're not quite sure how to do it. The only thing that they have a clue is that they're not exactly sure how exactly Charlie's old boss was ousted from power. They have only one clue that involves traveling to a cemetery in Mattoon, Illinois, to follow up on, to maybe figure out exactly what's going on. And in order to travel like that, Charlie is going to need a mortal assistant. This brings in our second main character, who is Ashonda. Ashonda is a teenage girl who just got out of prison. And she's going to live with her aunt, who works as a medium. And the important thing here is that her aunt has no supernatural powers of any kind. It's a realistic take on this, which is to say that working at a medium, 90% of the time, she's a con artist. You know, maybe kind of your nicer con artist. It's sort of bordering on a therapist a lot of the time. You know, sort of you talk about your problems, you talk about, you know, comes up with useful advice, and then say that his dead relative's delivering the useful advice. But it's not real, mostly, 90% of the time. Because in that last 10% of the time, it turns out that if you hang a shingle outside your door advertising ghosts, ghosts will in fact show up. And what happens is that Ashonda, without even really meaning to, as she's learning the business from her aunt, kind of develops a little side hustle going of helping spirits out with their problems that they can't necessarily solve themselves. Charlie approaches her. She doesn't really trust it because this is kind of a more elaborate job than she's used to, and because ghosts generally, again, they're not nice people. These are not the people that went on to the good afterlife. These are the people that screwed up and are stuck around here. But Charlie is able to put a lot of money on the table, and they head out, and they do this investigation, and they cruise around central Illinois a lot, and I think that's as far in the plot as I'm going to go because lots of things happen to the two of them. But yeah, that's another short novel. It's about 54,000 words long. It's you could call it a horror, you could call it dark fantasy. I would argue that it's a little bit grittier and more kind of realistic based than like dark fantasy or urban fantasy. At this point, tends to evoke things that if you squint could kind of be like the old White Wolf games, like Vampire the Masquerade or something. You know, where there's lots of proper nouns and conspiracies and politics, and that's not quite what it is. But it's definitely not super gore either. You know, I mean, it's funny. There's lots of talking. You know, there's lot. It's like a big part of it is character stuff. And then every so often, you know, they're in a diner, and the diner gets besieged by zombies, and scary things do happen. So it's kind of in that sweet spot in there. And again, that's called Charlie Harmer Takes a Ride. The second big project, the third one. This is actually the first one of all these three that I ever wrote, and I just revisited it and did some kind of heavy revisions, and then at that point, I think that's all the revisions I'm going to be doing on it for a while, because at this point, this is something I've actually been working on for 10 years, as opposed to the other two, which they're like 54,000 words each. This thing, I think, is about 120, 130,000 words. My working title right now is White Rabbit Society, and I'm trying to come up with something else to call it. And the my quick elevator pitch for that pretty much is it's the young John Constantine adventures. And my other elevator pitch is a story where every character is John Constantine, just at a different phase in his life and with a slightly different attitude. And basic premise of it is that we have a young man who has been sent to live with his grandmother in a town not unlike Beloit, Wisconsin. While his parents are getting a divorce, and his parents really kind of do not have their shit together, and he ends up living with his grandmother for longer than was intended. And while he's staying with his grandmother, his Uncle Paul visits his grandmother's house, which is a little weird because he didn't know he had an Uncle Paul. Nobody's ever talked about an Uncle Paul, and his grandmother doesn't want to discuss who Uncle Paul is. And it quickly becomes apparent that Uncle Paul is somebody who knows a lot about things that people are not supposed to know about. He has lots of nasty little tricks where he can sort of point at people and just sort of cut off the air from their throat, kind of Jedi style. He's got this big briefcase full of kind of creepy-looking leather-bound books. There's lots of things going on, and right about when Paul is and Andrew are trying to figure each other out, somebody attacks Paul, throwing him into a coma, leaving Andrew with this briefcase full of books and a few other accoutrements, knowing that that Paul was running from something, and he doesn't exactly know, and Andrew doesn't exactly know what, and all that he knows is that not only is this whoever it was that was hunting Paul coming to town to try to find him, but also all of Paul's creepy friends also know that something is up, and they're all coming to town too. So Andrew, the whole book is the first half of it is Andrew trying to deal with that situation, and it doesn't quite work out totally for him. There are some pretty serious negative consequences. Second half of the book picks up a few years later in Chicago, and Andrew is more of a young adult. He's a little bit savvier. He's kind of been through the shit a little bit, but now he's also dealing with the he's at this point he's kind of more in the big leagues, and he's definitely still not prepared for that. So he goes from a kind of a minor league nasty situation that is really tough for a 15-year-old to deal with, to a much wider scale situation that is kind of much tougher for a 20-year-old to be dealing with. And lots of creepy things happened, and people double crossed. There's the double crosses like per page in this novel. I'm really pretty happy about that. Even over the course of the whole thing, like it's 130,000 words, people are just screwing each other over all the goddamn time, and I really kind of like enjoy that aspect of it. You know, and there's genuine it's definitely it's more of just a straight up urban fantasy. It's not as gritty, it's not as realistic. There's lots of it's a little bit more comic booky, but at the same time I think there's some genuine feeling behind it and there's some cool things going on, and I think that it's fun. So, those are my big three. And at that point, like I said, because I pretty much have those now and I'm just kind of sending those out to agents constantly, I'm sending those out to publishers constantly. Most of my other writing effort is mostly devoted to making noise. So I'm going to be sending out short stories. I'm going to be targeting the kinds of markets that, again, that tend to make noise and attract attention. I'm going to be doing lots of podcasts. I'm going to be shooting for awards and anthologies more directly than I have before. And I'm also probably going to be looking at some other media. I mean, if people want to collaborate, if people, hey, I like comic books, I like plays, I like all these different things, I have more time and I'm more willing to devote some effort to that stuff than I have before. And then the other thing is, I'm kind of curious from all you fine folks reading this, what you guys think I should be doing or what you guys would like to see from me. And I've not really been in a position where I've been able or interested in taking requests before. And I kind of am now. I mean, if you want something from me, this is what I hope to be kind of a golden opportunity to do that. If you really feel like, you know, Brendan, you should be writing, romance novels, you should be going for it. Or you should be, you know, you should be writing plays, or you should be, Twine Games, choose your own adventure books, whatever it is that, hey, I think it'd be really cool if Brendan wrote that. I'm probably more suggestible to stuff like that now than I've ever been before. And this is probably only a short window of time because, you know, once I kind of get my teeth in things, I kind of decide what I'm going to be doing and then I go ahead with it and then I stop listening to people again. So if there's something you think I ought to be doing and you've been sitting, you've been biting your tongue on this, or you think it would be a really cool thing that you'd like to see, tell me about it. You know, I'm on Facebook. You can shoot messages back through this. There's a bunch of different things that you can do. I'm kind of curious to hear what you have to see. This is a big, exciting time for me, and it's an adventure. I'm still really enjoying it. And thank you also. This is a quick note. I've gotten one of the things, and I've talked about this with Bad Grammar and just more generally, it kind of, my attitude with things like this is usually just to assume that nobody is going to help me out. And just to sort of go ahead and figure out, okay, I need to be prepared for nobody to do nothing and to be putting all this weight myself on. And sometimes that helps, sometimes it could be considered a character flaw, but what's really been coming out, the more that I do the reading series, the more I do things like this, and just everything that I've been doing is, the incredible amount of help and support that I get from the people around me. So that's my family, that's, you know, my friends inside and outside the writing world. People kind of, you know, seem to be kind of into what I'm doing, and people really kind of seem to enjoy it. And they've been willing to help me out in all kinds of ways, big and small, and that means a great deal to me, because that kind of makes this little pipe dream that I'm on something sort of resembling realistic and something sort of resembling possible, and that's a big deal. So thank you so much. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And if there's something you want me to be doing, please let me know. That's a lot of talking. Jeez. Okay, I am going to be reading a story. This story has actually appeared before. I've kind of read it out extensively. This is a good, funny one that I like a lot. This is called The Sasquatch versus Chupacabra Variations 1 through 9. And the reason it's Variations 1 through 9 is because I've been threatening to write Sasquatch versus Chupacabra for a long time. And then when I finally actually sat down to do it, I couldn't really come up with any one plot that I felt did justice in, that deserved to sort of be Sasquatch versus Chupacabra Prime, that really encompassed the encompassed the concept completely and really mined all the possibilities out of it. So instead, what we have is the Sasquatch versus Chupacabra Variations 1 through 9. And I'm going to turn the thing off for a second so I can get set up. This will be just 1 second. Thank you. All right, everybody. This is the Chupacabra versus Sasquatch Variations 1 through 9. Number 1. Chupacabra spots Sasquatch from across the battlefield. Sasquatch turns. Chupacabra locks eyes with Sasquatch. A wind blows over the tall grass, parting the smoke like a curtain, revealing the sun. Chupacabra chatters its teeth and skitters to the side, maneuvering through the bodies of the fallen. Sasquatch lifts her bone club and howls. 2. For the first time, Timmy's father left without him. They'd had an argument. Timmy had claimed that he'd had a growth spurt, that the suit wouldn't fit anymore. But the suit was adjustable, and they both knew it. "This isn't just about us," Timmy's father said before leaving. "This is about the legend." Timmy didn't care about the legend. He was 14 years old. He didn't want to spend his nights wandering around the woods baiting amateur cameramen. It was embarrassing. The cabin was quiet. An hour later, bored and lonely, Timmy strapped on the suit and went out into the woods. He followed his father's tracks through the snow, through the trees and bushes, over the hills and in long sprints through the valleys. He ducked under a low-hanging branch and stopped. He stopped before he heard or saw anything. He stopped without knowing why. He didn't run or hide, the way he'd been taught to do when spotted by a tourist or a neighbor. He stayed perfectly still. They stepped out from behind the trees in a semicircle, naked, covered with wrinkled mint-green skin. They were his height and had claws. They approached. They took a step forward, and his shoulders pressed into something large and reassuring. Timmy looked behind him as the creature stepped forward. It smelled like a wet blanket left in an alley. It growled, they hissed. It was over incredibly quickly. They tried to surround it, but it just grabbed them one by one and shook them by the neck. Crack, 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 crack. The last one tried to get away, but wound up flying through the air. It hit an oak tree with a loud bass drum thump and fell to the ground more quietly. The creature turned around. Its fur stayed with thin streaks of blood where its skin had been punctured by the pack's teeth. For the first time, it could look into Timmy's eyes and vice versa. The creature saw Timmy. And Timmy saw, for sure, although if he'd had a moment to think, he would have already known, that this was not a human being looking back at him, that this was the thing his father had pretended to be, that Timmy had been told only existed as a fantasy that must be protected, like Santa Claus. The creature disappeared into the woods. Only after it was gone did Timmy's heart start to beat faster, did he feel the panic rising in his throat. He pushed deeper into the trees, in the direction his father had been traveling. He saw them in a valley beyond the trees. He saw his father's face. The rest of the suit had been punctured and ripped, but only the headpiece had come off completely. Lying on the snow next to them was another creature, much smaller than the one Timmy had seen. The snow around them was soaked in blood. Timmy fell to his knees, and his world went white. 3. Sasquatch watches Chupacabra guest hosting The Tonight Show. Sasquatch is upset. Sasquatch's agent is talking, but Sasquatch isn't paying very close attention. Sasquatch growls. This isn't even bad for us, necessarily. We don't really know if you guys are competing for the same audience. This could be a rising tides lifts all boats kind of situation. Sasquatch picks up the complimentary hummus and carrot sticks plate with one giant hand and smashes it into his face. He drops what's left of the plate back onto the table, gets up, and walks off. God damn it, we do not have time for your bullshit. You have a film to promote. Sasquatch's agent pursues him to the green room. 4. Sasquatch's troop freezes in perfect formation on the last power cord, their sequined black jumpsuits shining in the spotlight. The crowd stands and applauds, then applauds again when the judges give their score. Sasquatch struts off stage, pausing only for a moment to purr cattily at Chupacabra. The other girls in Sasquatch's crew laugh and high-five as they go past. Chupacabra gathers her fellow dancers around her to form the power circle. They put their hands in the center and lift them together with a cheer, then rush onto the stage. A few minutes later, the music stops. The room is silent as the judges flip over their scorecards. The audience cheers. Chupacabra's dancers embrace tearfully as Chupacabra leaps into the air and pumps her fist. 5. Sasquatch knew she was trouble from the minute she walked into his office. Her story didn't add up, but he needed the money. He took the job. Days later, a frantic midnight call from a payphone. Sasquatch barks and growls in panic. Chupacabra clicks her teeth reassuringly. 6 months. A decrepit motel room. Chupacabra closes the door to the medicine cabinet and sees Sasquatch standing behind her. Chupacabra turns, falls to her knees, begs, entreats, promises. A place like that, one soft gunshot and nobody asks questions. Sasquatch's Hudson coupe pulls out of the motel parking lot and disappears, down the highway, into the night. 6. In the desert, you have to walk a long way to see your own reflection. The runt walked a long way to the water and looked down as the sun came up. Eight times he had done this, as many times as he had fingers, and eight times he had turned back. Looking at himself, his malformed knees, his deflated football of a head, his stumpy claws, he knew, as he'd always known, that he did not belong. He did not know what the world had in store for him beyond the world of sand and sun and moon and sleeping goats full of warm blood. Beyond the pack. Beyond everything he had ever known. Eight times he had come here, and eight times he had turned away. But not this time. Because this time he had seen a vision. It had come to him in a dream. Tall, strong, powerful. The runt knew it in a place beyond reason or fear. He would journey to the north. He would find the noble snow warriors. And he would join them, or die trying. He traveled by train car, by boat, by foot. Once by bicycle. All his life he had avoided the cold. Now he sought it out. He made his way north. He made it to Washington. He didn't know exactly where he was going as he stepped into the trees. He walked, closed his eyes, let his feet move by themselves. He could feel it. His destiny, getting closer. He stopped, opened his eyes. He saw them, surrounding him, dozens of them, examining the stranger. One of their numbers stepped forward into the circle, hunched over, beat his chest, roared. They all knew the rules, in their blood, in their souls. To have a place in the pack, the runt would have to take it from someone else. The rest of the pack was silent as they circled each other. The defender swung. The challenger skittered backwards into the side, just out of reach. The defender rushed forward, growling and grasping and gnashing its teeth. The challenger sidestepped again and leaped, landing onto the defender's back. A quick woodpecker snap of his neck and teeth sunk into spine. The defender flailed around. The runt held fast and drank deeply. The defender rolled, slamming his opponent into the ground. The runt kept drinking. Blood splashed everywhere. The defender slowly got back up to his feet, whimpered, and fell again, face first in the snow. His body swelled as he inhaled a final time. He exhaled and was still. The runt stepped away and wiped his mouth. He looked around. The rest of the pack had not moved. He could not read their expressions. He felt suddenly lost. And then they began to beat their chests, softly at first, then louder, faster. The runt's heartbeat rose to meet the sound. Tears came to his eyes. He was home. 7. Stacy Phillips had not picked up a hitchhiker in years, not since her adventurous youth, but it was 2 o'clock in the morning and she was lonely. On the side of the highway to her left, she saw a large man wearing a trench coat. He seemed to have a beard, but she couldn't get a good look at his face. He held out a fist with his thumb up. She came very close to stopping, but thought of what her husband would say and kept going. A few miles down the road, she saw another hitchhiker, also in a trench coat. It was a child. It had to be. It was so little. The poor deer was lost. She considered the risk one more time, but ultimately she knew she had to do the right thing. She pulled over and unlocked her passenger side door. 8. Chupacabra sees. Scared large furry mammal. Lost in the desert. 9. Sasquatch gave the order. The helmsman nodded. Firing plasma missiles. 2 parallel violet lines lit up the view screen. An explosion followed a minute later. The bridge crew stared silently, relieved, all of them. Except for Sasquatch. The comm officer checked the sensors. Nothing but debris, sir. No escape pods, no concealment fields. Nobody got away from that one. The crew awaited his reaction, but Sasquatch said nothing. He leaned forward in the captain's chair and stared into the cold, hollow infinity of space. And that is it. Thank you so much. I hope you liked the story. And again, Gumbo Fiction on the 15th. Bad Grammar on the 17th and every third Friday of the month. And yeah, you can check out my stuff at www.brendandetzner.com. That's Brendandetzner, DETZNER.com. And I've got a lot of cool stuff going up. Thank you again to everybody out there that's been helping me out with this. I hope you enjoy the story. I hope you enjoy what's to come, because there is a lot of stuff coming. Thank you very much. Have a great one.
Bad Grammar is released according to a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported License. You can get the new Bad Grammar at iTunes and in the Listen section of Brendan Detzner Online the first week of every month. If you'd like to support Bad Grammar, thank you very much. We're good, but we would encourage you, if you're feeling generous, to go ahead and check out www.protect.org to learn more about a cause that we wholeheartedly support. Our theme music is lovingly provided to us by The Gotsicles. You can find out more about The Gotsicles over www.gotsicles.com. And that is it. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you here next month.